Session number 15538, Reel 1.
Mr. Dore, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Penge in London, 1917.
What did your father do for a living?
My father was a dentist.
Did you go to school in Penge?
No. Of course, that was the end of the war, towards the end of the war. It was December 1918. And, it was 18, not 17. And of course he was West Country, Bristol man, and so was my mother, and they at the end of the war they came back to Bristol, and I was then brought up in Bristol and Shirehampton until the outbreak of war.
What job were you doing when war broke out?
Well, I was I left school and I was waiting to go to Bristol University. And about the only interesting part of that is that I'd always had a bit of a yen to go to sea. And I went down to Avonmouth and got a job on board the banana boat, the Baiano, going to Jamaica. And I did two trips on that as an ordinary seaman. But that was purely as a fill-in until I went to Bristol University, where I only did a year, because it was then clear towards the end of 38, well, right at the end of 38, that there was going to be a war. And after a lot of argument with my father, but he did agree, and I applied for a short service commission in the Royal Air Force.
What were you studying at Bristol?
Oh, chemistry, physics, zoology.
Why did you decide to apply for a commission in the Air Force?
Well, because I knew there was going to be a war, and I wanted to be in the Air Force when it broke out, and I had met an old chum of mine that I'd known for some years, and he'd joined the Royal Air Force. He just joined, and we were talking about it, and I said, I think this is just the thing for me. So I applied for a short service commission, and I was heard almost immediately up in London, and I was accepted, and I think this business of going to sea, you know, puts a lot of weight, but they enjoyed that, the board, and they thought that was quite a good thing. And I, of course, had matriculated by then and all that sort of thing.
Which year was it that you applied for the short service commission?
Well, it must have been right at the end of 1939, and I started it in January, 38, and I started it in the 39.
How did you react when you heard the news that we were at war?
Well, by this time, I was over in the Middle East. We did our preliminary training. I did that at Gatwick, the ab initio, on Magisters, and then we went from there. We were then posted overseas to do advanced flying training. Then war broke out then, and they didn't quite know what was going to happen, so we were then posted to Habaneer in Iraq, to do advanced flying training. We finished there, and they didn't know quite where to post us, so we came back to Abyssouer in Egypt at a short navigation course. And from there, I was posted down to Aden. And 9 of us volunteered to go, because at the time they said it's a 2-year station, whereas if we'd stayed in the Middle East, well, it was been anything. So that's why we volunteered to go to Aden.
So you hadn't seen any action at all?
Not until I got to Aden. No. No, of course, the war was in its infancy then. It hadn't really affected the Middle East in any case, and we were still under training anyway. So, but of course, we did see some action when we got down to Aden.
Of what kind?
Well, to start with, when we got to Aden, we all had to sit an exam on pilot's notes for the Blenheims, because at that time they had not a lot of Blenheims. I think it was about 18 or so in Aden, and they had one squadron, 2 flights for Blenheims, and 1 flight of Vincent aircraft, which were the old single engine T type of thing. They'd been in the service for donkey's years. But only four chaps were taken on Blenheim straight away. That was the first four in this exam. And I was fifth. So the rest of us, although we were in 8th Squadron in Aden, we weren't flying Blenheims at that time. We were on Vincent's. And they were occupied, well, largely we were occupied on all sorts of things on the Vincent's, because it was a single-engine aircraft, but it would lift its weight, it would lift its own weight in freight or bombs or whatever. It's quite an old thing, you think, going along at about 100 miles an hour. And we did, well, we did domestic flights of all sorts of things. We did policing jobs on it, because prior to that, you see, prior to the war, the RAF was responsible for peacekeeping out there. We couldn't have the army all over the place, because there were places they just couldn't get to, rather like Iraq and those places, you see. We that's what we did in Blenheims, and we actually had to, we actually used to dive bomb some of these recalcitrant sheikhs and things. And in fact, I hate to have to say it, but sometimes we were ordered to do it. Well, it was to kill their livestock, to get them into line, to bring them into line and to obey themselves, stop fighting and all this sort of thing. And
were they warned in any way beforehand?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, because we used to, very often, there was the political, what there was, the political, oh dear, I just can't remember the thing. Well, anyway, the political officers based down there, of course. And, oh yes, they would have would used to drop notes and things on them and all that sort of thing, and then they were supposed to comply, which they didn't do. And, oh no, we were only used in as a last resort. And then they, of course, after they'd been bombed a bit, they soon... but if anybody was... they used to shoot at us, of course, with the rifles and things, but if anybody was unfortunate enough to force land, well, of course, you'd had it. And we did lose one crew down there, and then they weren't too careful about how they finished you off.
Did you lose anybody from the squadron?
Yes, we lost one crew in that way. Yes.
So they never returned?
Oh no, they were murdered by the Arabs. Whilst on one of the, well, at least whilst on at one of the Vincent flights there, I myself had a very unpleasant incident, because we, at the time, I was going on to Blenheims, but I also was flying Vincent's, and the Vincent flight commander, you know, sometimes when he was pushed for a crew or something like that, he would ask me if I'd fly for it, which I did. Because I was on to him all the time, you know, to do that. And he woke me up one morning at 6 o'clock in the morning, and it was a Sunday, and we'd been out on a party the night before, and I'd only been in bed a couple of hours, and he said, you know, I want a crew, one pilot, to take a Vincent up to Mercurius, which was a hill station about 100 and some odd miles, 110, 120 miles north of us. It was three aircraft, and we were to take up ground crew, where they would have a, you know, fortnight's leave up in the hills there. It was 6,000 feet up, and of course I said, oh God, you know, I can't do this. I mean, I just got the bends on. Anyway, cut a long story short, I did go, and when we got out to the aircraft, we had the deputy flight commander was leading the three of us, and when I ran up the engine, tested the magnetos, one of them just about cut out, and I quickly switched it on again before it did. And that was my big mistake. I was stupid to do that, but there you are, I did. And we took off, and we climbed, and by the time we got to Mercurius, which, as I say, was almost north of Aden, as I remember it, wasn't far off, we couldn't land. The cloud base was down on the 6,000 feet mark. We were flying at about 18,000, so anyway, we had to come back. And when we were flying the Vincents, we had a kind of method of we had no RT or anything like that. We used to pass messages by waggling the arm, dit 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 dit, you know, Morse coding. And I tried to tell them that I was having engine trouble, but they didn't seem to see me. We headed for home, and the other two gradually began to pull away, and my engine started running rougher and rougher, and I couldn't keep up with them, and I was gradually losing height. They disappeared, and I went into the cloud. And it was cumulonimbus, and we got thrown all over the place. I had one airman in the back, of course, who was my passenger to stay at Mercurius, and we went down in the cloud, and I lost control completely. We were just thrown all over the place. My goggles came off, the whole shooting match, you know, and went mad, and the bottom panel opened up, and sand and goodness knows what had been there for donkey's years all came blowing up in my face. And I was trying to get the chap behind me to bail out, because we were coming down, there's all mountains the whole way, and on either side of us ranges of mountains going up to about 10,000 feet, 11,000 feet, and I couldn't see a thing, of course, and I expected at any moment to go into one of these. There's nothing we could do. I mean, I just couldn't say anything. And the chap behind me was, he wouldn't go. So anyway, there we are. I then got down to about 10,000 feet where it eased off, and I got control back again, and I set a course for Aden, which ran down the valley, hopefully was on the way to Aden, and these mountains came up either side of the course I was flying, as long as I was flying down the middle of it. And of course I didn't know whether I was or whether I wasn't, so, but anyway, that's what I had to do. And we came on down, and the first thing I did was to break cloud, and there were just boulders right in front of me and a tree, and I altered course to hit the tree with a wing, which I hoped would break my impetus, so to speak, and then I wouldn't go into any of these great boulders. And we hit this thing, hit the tree, which it did. It stopped the aircraft, but the main plane, in the middle of which, directly over my head, was a petrol tank, and it hit the wing, and the main plane, the upper plane, came down right on my head and pushed me down in the cockpit, and I couldn't move, and I tried to get the chap in the back to come and help me out. And he was just shocked, I suppose. He was all right, but he was shocked, and he didn't take any notice. He just shook his head, and all I had to get out of was this flap just on the side of the cockpit, which you normally lowered to swing your leg over to get in, and that's all I had to get out of. But then the petrol started to come out of the tank above, and it was running over the engine and going up in kind of steam and smoke, and I thought, my God, it's going to break into flames any moment now. And I got out of that hole. I don't know how I did it, but I got out of it, tore all my flying gear and so on. I had ripped all down my back and chest and goodness knows what. But anyway, I got out. And but it started, after a couple of hours, it started to lift, and I realised that we were up very near to a place that we'd recently been bombing. And I said, well, we've got to walk back. Now, I don't think we were more than about 80 miles of Aden, and we could have walked back, I'm absolutely positive, and we would have got home. But anyway, we started to walk. Then three Vincents came up looking for us. One of the things I'd managed to take from the aircraft was the very cartridges and pistols, and I fired that, and they picked me up, or they picked us both up. They dropped a message to say that the flight commander had landed about 3 or 4 miles north of us, turned round and walked back again, and whilst he'd landed there, he had his gunner with his, you know, on guard, his tail gunner, and whilst he himself shifted various smaller boulders. Anyway, we got aboard, and he flew off, which was a very, very brave thing for him to do, because he was, how he landed in this little area, heavens knows, and I mean, I think it meant a whole lot that he'd even tried. Incredible, really. And he took off and got us back. And that was that, really. I mean, there was no, I was torn off a strip for going. I shouldn't have gone, and I realised I shouldn't have gone with a mag drop like that. It was different, but there you are. As I said it to the chap who was investigating the situation at the time, if you didn't fly occasionally when these something like with that, you know, there's a lot of things we wouldn't have done. Anyway, that was that. And
when would that have been, do you think? Sometime in 1940.
It would have been 41, I think. I could tell you that if I, you know, could look it up in my logbook. I've got it there, but I can't tell you just. 1941, almost certainly. Or 40, yes, 40 it could well have been. Yes, I think more likely 40. Sorry, yes, more likely 40. I can confirm it afterwards if you like. And after that, I went on to Blenheim's and took part in some operational flying, bombing against the Italians.
Just before you tell me about the Italian side of it,
yes.
When you were attacking the recalcitrant
yes.
tribesmen, was there much danger from their fire?
I wouldn't have thought so. No, no, no. No, the main... No. I should say no. I mean, they were, with rifle fire, you know, they're rifles, but I don't think... I would say, well, very, very slight risk.
So all that work with the tribesmen was done in Vincent's?
Yes.
Now, can you tell me about the work that 8th Squadron did against the Italians from Aden, please?
Yes. Well, I wasn't in it from the word go on the operational side of it. I did go on to Blenheim, as I say, later on, and I did 20 operations... bombing operations with the squadron before the Italians packed it up, and then I flew on Vincent's for during the time when they were retreating through Assab, doing army cooperation and army support.
Whereabouts did you attack the Italians usually on those operations?
Oh well, targets you mean? Well, there was Assab. They had a couple of they had an anti-aircraft ship outside Assab. We bombed that. Diridawa, Berbera. Offhand, I can't think of any other place. But yes, that was about it. I can't remember, you know, other places. The most dangerous part of it, as far as I was concerned, was coming back in a Blenheim one day, going down the Red Sea. There were two ships way ahead of us, or below us, and I knew that they were anti-aircraft vessels coming round to protect Aden. And they decided they'd have a bit of gunnery practice on me. And the next thing we knew, we were flying into all the flak that they were sending out. But that really, I expect, was probably the most dangerous part of the whole thing. No, they did used to shoot at us, but as I say, I was really at the tail end of it and I didn't see the worst of it.
What nature of targets were there? What kind of targets?
Oh, airfields. Yes, airfields, I suppose. I remember front gunning an aircraft on the ground at Berbera. Yes, oh, and of course, Diridawa was... that was quite a big, you know, airfield and air station. The Italians didn't really bomb us in Aden very much. There was only one instance there when they did. They obviously, what they used to do apparently was only the leader knew where they were going. And on this particular raid, they were going to bomb Aden and then... they were going to bomb some target short of us and then they were going to bomb Aden and go home. What happened was they missed the first target that they were going to bomb and bombed Aden. And the two chaps in the, or the two aircraft in the formation there, thought they were bombing the first target, you see. And so they then bombed Aden and then proceeded east and one of them, but there they must have realised a mistake, but one didn't. He went on and force landed up the coast, which our station commander went up, and he flew the aircraft back to Aden, SR-79. But, as I remember it, but that was what happened.
How effective do you think your own attacks on Abyssinia and Eritrea were?
Well, I think they were pretty reasonable. I can't say, because I wasn't on it the whole time, you see. I mean, because we didn't get onto the squadron immediately, we flew the Vincent sort of part of the way along, and then as there were casualties and that sort of thing, we would get taken on to Blenheim's.
Were they all daylight attacks?
Oh, no, not all of them, no. In the main, but there's one interesting thing there. The station commander there, he actually used to go off on his own at night in a Vincent and dive bomb Assab, which was quite a thing, actually. And I said to him one day, I said, I'd like to come with you, sir. And he said, no good to chaps like you. I mean, you can't sit in that thing for 4.5 hours. These are stringy old fellow like me. And he went off, and he was incredible, actually. He'd spent practically all his service life in Aden. He'd gone there and he'd been a flight lieutenant. He then became a flight commander. He then commanded the squadron. And then he became station commander. And if you ask me his name, I'll have to look it up, because I just can't remember offhand.
Did you ever get hit by flak, or...?
Oh, just, yes, but not badly. I mean, nothing like bombing over Germany, that's for sure. But then again, you know, we did lose crews, but as I say again, I wasn't in it right from the word go, unfortunately.
Any enemy fighter opposition?
Not for me personally. I mean, I saw them, but I wasn't actually attacked.
What was it like flying the Blenheim after the Vincent?
Oh, well, well, there's no problem at all, really. No, I mean, with the Vincent, you could say that was a bigger problem, because there's no, you couldn't have any duel in that, you see. You just sat up in the front. You were 11 and a half feet above the ground in the old Vincent, and you just had your head there under the biplane, and you would fly with somebody else standing in the well behind him, looking over his shoulder, and then he'd say, right, old boy, it's all yours, and then you went solo. But of course, in the Blenheim, they had a dual Blenheim there, but by that time we didn't need a lot of instruction to go solo. I mean, perhaps just half an hour of general flying, and then a couple of circuits and landings, and that was it.
How did you enjoy doing this work?
Well, I mean, it was a job of work. I mean, I had to, really. I mean, I would sooner have been flying Blenheims all the time on operational flying throughout, but then somebody else had to do these other jobs there, and I wasn't the only one, of course. I mean, there were 9 or 10 of us doing it, and well, fine. Part of it was good fun, but then we were young at that time, and but I was glad to get on the bomb operational side. Well, fully operational on Blenheims. That's what I was felt I was there for.
How did that period of your service come to an end?
When the Italians finished, the squadron, we weren't all required, and five of us were posted up to Egypt. We went up by sea in an old French boat called a freighter called Ville d'Amiens, which was manned by all the people of the race. I mean, they had all sorts of things. The captain was a Frenchman. They had one Englishman, one of the officers. All the rest came from all over the place. Any country in the world you could possibly think of were all on the crew of this thing. And they did have one murder on the way up. But we went from there. It was quite well. It was quite pleasant. They just took us up to Egypt on it, and it was a meat boat actually. And she was coming back from Australia and taking meat up, presumably up to Egypt, I suppose. So that's what we ate practically the whole time. And after the rations at Aden, it was very nice, very pleasant change. And we were supposed then, when we got to up to Egypt, was to go up to Russia. That was the whole idea. And we joined up with the squadron, 45 squadron, in Egypt.
When you say we, who do you mean?
Well, all the aircrew. I mean, there were the five of us up from Blenheim, Aden rather. Then there was a whole lot of other aircrew there, navigators and wireless operators and gunners, and not wireless operators because they were all pilots, navigators and gunners.
So this was a miscellaneous group?
They were drawn from everywhere, yes. Well, they were 45 squadron basically. No, I beg your pardon, that was 45 was later. No, it was just a squad, didn't have a number at all, as far as I remember. We were all there with our aircraft, ground crew. The only thing we were missing was a commanding officer. We didn't have a CO. And we just hung around for a bit, waiting to go. My pal that came up to Aden with me, we asked if there was anything we could do to pass the time with them, and they said, well, have you ever flown hurricanes? And we said no, and they said, well, will you ferry a few hurricanes up to the desert? So we did that, but we had that was rather amusing because we hadn't flown them before, and no fighter aircraft. In fact, I don't think a fighter airplane, we had no idea. And they didn't give us any idea. An airman said there was nobody there at this place, this airfield just outside Cairo. It had a number, but they just said, I said to this chap, well, what do you do? And he said, well, I'll start it for you. And I said, well, how'd you close it down? And he said, how'd you do it? And that was it. I mean, and so he started it up, and I took off. And tried it on the way up, you know, for stalls and this, that and the other, and just wheeled around and that sort of thing. And then there was a bit of a thing at the other end because, excuse me, I couldn't get the undercarriage down. And I circled around the top of this desert thingy, and where they had some aircraft. I knew where I was, of course, but it was over the top. I couldn't get the undercarriage down, and I pushed it and pulled it and heavens knows what, and I began to get terribly worried then because I thought, gosh, you know, I should know how to do this, but I don't. And I tried to work it out, and heavens knows what, if there was a catch or whatever it was. Anyway, eventually, by just absolute brute force, I got hold of this thing, and an H-type kind of, and I gave it a terrific whack, and it did go down, thank goodness. I learned later from talking to a pilot who was experienced on them, who taking them up, and that they're all new, of course, they're all being put together out there, and everything was so stiff, that was the whole thing, and I didn't know that, and he said, I've had it so stiff that I've had to take my shoe off and whack it with my shoe to get the undercarriage down. Anyway, that was that, really. Right at the last minute, the Russians said, well, thanks very much. They took our aircraft, but they didn't want us. So I and one other, this was posted down to 11th Squadron in the Sudan, down to Wadi Gazouza. And we went there as flying instructors, but both of us started... I better tell you, this is kind of amusing, actually. It just occurred to me that... This is nothing really to do with flying. Is that all right?
Yes.
Because a chap named Slaughter, Todd Slaughter, we left 211 Squadron. We weren't there very long because we kept on every week making application for an operational posting. And we were... down from... The